Recent reports state that rebels in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have consolidated control over the Rubeya Colton mining region, imposing a production tax estimated to generate around $300,000 in monthly revenue. That's according to the United Nations Security Council, and they've confirmed this a couple of days ago. So this comes as M23 rebels, a Tutsi-led organization purportedly backed by the Rwandan government, seized the area which produces minerals used in the production of smartphones, laptops, computers, etc. We've had this, you know, conversation on a couple of occasions. Now, there's been an upsurge and there's been some intense fighting dating back to April this year. Online, to speak to us about the latest developments, economist and political analyst Dr. Jason Mutsioka. Good afternoon, Dr. Jason.
You and the listeners, thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you back on again, Dr. Jason. A lot of happening in the Middle East at the moment, particularly occupied Palestine, and now with Israeli occupation forces invading a sovereign country in the form of Lebanon. So perhaps not much focus from a media perspective on latest developments in the DRC and also South Sudan, where there is another conflict and genocide raging. But perhaps contextualize for us, Doc, what's the very latest in the DRC?
So maybe a step back to the conflict in the DRC. First, I think we are dealing with, and I've always labored this point, with a world that is the UN General Assembly, the Secretary General Guterres, he referred to the world as in what he referred to as engulfed in turmoil. So those are the statements he used. And if you look at the statements or the same speech that he made in the same assembly last year, he referred to as the world as going to hell, of course, referring to climate change. This is to say that there is increasing sense of despair and pessimism around the world, not just on the climate change front, which was the focus for the UN General Assembly for last year, but also for this year, particularly the focus being on conflicts. But the whole idea and the narrative of unstable world is really tethered on the point of labored in other platforms of a multipolar world, which we now have a declining, the declining of the empire. This is the United States, of course. And if you look at history, the fact that when you no longer have a world prefect who has the muscle, the power, and the resources to try and contain these conflicts, then everybody takes chances because they know that there's nobody to kind of intervene. And this is not to really suggest that the U.S. needs to be the world's prefect, but the way the world has operated for the last 1,000 or so years, going all the way back to the Roman Empire, when you have empire, of course, it has its own atrocities, but there is a sense of deterrence, and you don't have these kinds of conflicts popping up everywhere. So we are at a time of U.S. decline and the rise of China, of course, and this has created a multipolar world where you have different axes of power, and everybody who is disgruntled trying to exercise their power without deterrence. That's where we really are in history. And this is not the end in my perspective. Again, this might sound pessimistic, but it's not the end of the rise of conflicts. We are going to see worse of these kinds of conflicts, I think, because of where we are in world history. Now, that's the broader geopolitical context of what's going on in Congo, in Sudan, in Lebanon, the whole of Middle East, of course, what's going on there. Now, to Congo, I think that the interesting issue here is for DRC, you've had the M23 movement, which is we know that it's backed by Rwanda, and I remember we had that discussion before on the role that Rwanda has been playing. Rwanda has, of course, claimed that they are not really involved, but I mean, the evidence is telling; it's obvious on the table. So this is really perhaps a case of one state infiltrating another, but in a very strategic way, because It's supporting the M23's sort of military movement, and this now goes beyond just conflict to capital. And this is again what I would call to as the clash of capital, where you are seeing one sovereign state invading another sovereign state by proxy, and it doesn't just do the conflict exchanges of munitions, but you really are seeing attack of capital production itself, which is what you are seeing in the case of the DRC. So that's the much broader context.
Now, Dr. Jason, looking at these numbers now at the moment, the rebels are generating around $300,000 in monthly revenue. It's kind of like it's pretty much, you know, racketeering. But then if I think about it from a broader perspective, in as much as $300,000 in monthly revenue is quite substantial from an African perspective, from a continent's perspective, considering the value of the US dollar on global markets, it then makes one take a step back and then think about multinational corporates and huge companies, conglomerates, and even international actors that are continuing to benefit from the rich reserves of Colton, etc., in the mines in the DRC. Not to say we're wanting to overlook the $300,000 monthly revenue, but that would be minuscule compared to what multinational corporates are actually taking out of the DRC. Far bigger.
Absolutely. And so again, there is an economic context, and you rightly sketched out the outer ring of it. And when you look at the amount that's been placed or at least proposed and mentioned in the UN Security Council, I think firstly, it's hugely underrated. I don't think that this is the amount that's being generated. I mean, you're talking about the areas that they should be able to have smartphone, computers, and so on, supply chains. There's no way that that would be the amount that they are generating, number one. So secondly, you're absolutely right. I think that, again, going back to geopolitical and geoeconomic context, the major actors around the world now, and you can look that up, and your listeners are welcome to look that up, it's not really so much of nation states, but multinational corporations. So if you look at some of the world's largest multinational corporations, they have a greater capitalization. Some of them, if you consider their revenues, they have a greater GDP than several African countries. So this being told, remember that we are dealing with supply chains, of course, from Congo. It's one of the richest countries in the world in terms of mineral resources. So the supply chains are there. But the interesting thing is here where you have politics and capital together. And what I mean by that is that you have, for example, mining companies in the DRC. They're mining illegally, but they are being protected either by their governments or by the existing government itself, for them to continue extracting revenue or the mining resources from there. Keeping in mind that in most of the mining countries, DRC being, of course, worst case scenario, this is a case of as nation states that become extremely wealthy, particularly government officials, that become extremely wealthy from the mining because they don't have the mining technologies and the skills. So they import these skills or they make concessions with multinational corporations that have the equipment, the technologies, the skills. But we know that ultimately, we call it externalization. So you have more of the resources that are really going to the government officials themselves. And that is really the case with the DRC. So I think the numbers are underrated. I think they are much higher than that. And this is just the fact that you needed to have, in my view, figures put on the table. But I don't see the risk as proportional. The risk of mining is clearly not proportional to $300,000. I think it would be significantly higher if you're considering that multinational corporations are involved.
Just, Dr. Jason, in conclusion, we would want to plot a way forward for DRC, for Sudan, for Kenya, for Ghana, for the entire African continent, for us to really reach a point where we start telling our own story and not led by neo-colonialists, not led by neoliberalists, because we have a very unique story to tell, and Africa has a major part to play, particularly with the evolution now of the Global South? Where do we go from here, Doc?
I think firstly, it's very important for there's part of the solution which lies in public debate, and certainly sectors like yours and mine in academia sector, where we keep the debate going, particularly providing this kind of information on our platforms that are able to be accessed by Africans, African academics, and so on. I think the debate is very necessary to keep it going, number one. But also, secondly, it's very important for us to deal with this question of governance, because it's not just DRC. Then it's cases like Sudan. Then we are dealing with Burkina Faso. We're dealing with all these other, Guinea-Bissau and so on. The question of governance has been on the radar for at least the last, since most of the African states achieved independence, which is from the 1960s and so on. It's been more than 50 years since then. It's very important for us to bring to conclusion this debate around governance and see how we can move forward. The African Union has not been very effective. There has been calls for information, but then again, those who make those decisions are themselves tangled with these kinds of issues. This comes back again to ourselves as entities